in behind you. Over a decreased LOC. Male in his 30s, found unconscious, possible overdose. Had three naloxone, eyes are opening, performance.
We have a male 32 years of age. He hit his head, he's bleeding profusely. He's on the main floor of the building. He hit his head on the
bed. It's the Novo Hotel. Go to the lobby there. Staff on the allergic reaction. Female in her 30s, short of breath, swollen tongue, swollen throat, hard to swallow. No FDA on scene.
Welcome to the Remember That Patient podcast, episode 1.5, Paramedics and Patient Outcomes. This is our first series in our half episode series that's going to talk about mainly education, mainly research, and kind of a whole potpourri of various topics in pre-hospital care. Joining me on my first half episode here, episode 1.5, talking about paramedics and patient outcomes, is Jay Loosley. Jay is the Superintendent of Education at Middlesex London Paramedic Service. So I'd like to thank him for joining me to talk about this interesting topic. Jay, thanks for joining me, and I'll let you just kind of introduce yourself a little bit.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jeff. This is really exciting, and I'm really happy to be a part of the show. My name is Jay. I'm the Superintendent of Education for Middlesex London Paramedic Service, and I've been here for about 20 years, we'll say 19 in a bit. Started off my career as a registered nurse, taught at Fanshawe, worked with the Ottawa Hospital Research Institute for a while, and super happy to be doing this.
Excellent. Great. And it's going to become abundantly clear why we tapped you for this to our listeners in a bit, Jay. So I'll kind of jump right into it. One of the big drivers and kind of one of the big proponents of getting this podcast up and running is essentially patient outcomes and getting that information to EMS. So a lot of our cases that we're going to have on the show, there's going to be some degree of outcome data. Some may have none, some may have a little bit, some may have a lot. But I think one of the big drivers behind the show was to actually have that outcome data and how it can change our practice. It can kind of goes both ways, right? Sometimes it can confirm what we think, and sometimes it can tell us we were wrong, which is not necessarily a bad thing either. So one of the big hurdles, and we'll kind of kick the discussion off with this, Jay, I think it's plainly obvious for a lot of people. One of the big hurdles that we've grappled with is obviously PHIPAA and patient privacy and legislation and things like that. So what are your thoughts on that, and how can we overcome it, or can we?
Well, I mean, I think that's a fantastic question. And I think that's the big one, right? That's the elephant in the room. We want data that is being held by big, giant organizations, right? These big hospital companies. The thought of how can we as a paramedic know about our patient, really, we had to make it into a research study. And by doing that, we could then get the Research Ethics Board approval, our local approval, and then spin it as a research project to see if it's beneficial or not for paramedics to have that. And that was how we were able to get the final diagnosis for our paramedics during this time frame.
Okay, excellent. I know some services around Ontario have sort of tried this to some degree, and they've sort of launched, you know, limited degree patient outcome data, at least, I guess, in the basic element, like, did the patient live or die? Like, things like that, which I think are still helpful, but in kind of expanding on that, obviously, I think living or dying doesn't really tell us a whole lot about outcome and whether our differentials were accurate, right? So
yeah,
let's kind of talk about that research study. So how was it set up and framed? And I'll let you kind of take the mic for the next couple of minutes and tell us how you guys put this together.
Sure. Well, I'll kind of start off with where it began. So at our service, we really made some really good connections with our local neurologists and our neurology team. And I thought, you know what, like, can the neurology team give us feedback on our stroke calls? Like, what's happening with these cases? So we really made a good connection with our stroke team. And currently, we have them filling out a form for every time we bring in an acute stroke. So what the medics are doing is they're writing down their run number, all that kind of stuff. But they're writing on a confidence scale, on a 1 to 10 confidence scale, how confident are you as a paramedic that this call is a stroke or a TIA? And then the neurologist then fills out the bottom part, which basically says, was it a stroke or TIA? Yes or no. Did they receive TPA or thrombectomy? Did the person meet the prompt card? Were they admitted or discharged? And if so, to what service? And then a little bit of a free text for the neurologist to say, like, hey, they had a stroke in this area of the brain, or it ended up just being, you know, Bell's palsy or whatever it may be. So we started doing that and kind of thought, you know what, we need to branch this off. We need to make it, we need to do more. And you're right, we do the cardiac arrest research, or sorry, the feedback of, did they survive discharge, yes or no? And realizing that that's kind of limited, and really there's so much learning to be had with this outcome data, that we thought, let's put it into a research project, and let's really see if we can get this information. And because I think it's a good idea, and everyone on this study, I have to send huge props to Jen Doyle, Dr. Davis, Dr. Lewell, and Christine Van Arsen, who really just helped spearhead this program. And every one of them were just an amazing contribution to this. We thought, we all think this is a good idea, but what do the paramedics on the street think? Do they like feedback, or do they not want feedback? Do they not even care? So let's just take that and run with it. So what we did was we developed this project, and the method was this. So at handover, when the patient is delivered to the triage nurse, the paramedics completed a little survey. We had people in the hospital conducting these surveys. So the paramedic completed a survey recording what their suspected diagnosis was. And then the paramedics were asked, would they like to receive feedback on the patient's final ED diagnosis after discharge? And then if they said yes, then they would complete a 2-week follow-up survey. A 1-week follow-up survey, and then 1 3 months later. And that really just focused on, we'll go through it in a minute. So that's kind of the method. We had people in the hospital with clipboards. Patients are brought into the hospital. Hey, paramedic Jeff, you brought in this patient. Do you want feedback on this patient? And you might say, well, not really, because they have a broken wrist, and I know they have a broken wrist, so there's no need for patient feedback on that one. So, though, and really, those are a lot of our cases, right? You have a clear broken wrist, or an arm, or an ankle injury, or a knee injury, or whatever it may be. So I understand when you say, no, I don't want feedback for that. But for all the other cases, cardiac issues, abdominal pains, all those things, the paramedics would say, yes, I would like feedback on it. They put down what they think the problem is. So paramedic Jeff comes in, I think this is appendicitis, I would like to receive feedback, and then and that's the end of it.
There was nothing excluded from this, right? Like if there was a want, like any potential patient would be able to go in there?
Any patient could go in there, and it was before the patient met the triage nurse, so on their way. Okay. So that way that the medic wasn't getting like, oh, the nurse thinks it's this. Well, yeah, maybe me too, kind of thing. So it was right without getting any medical contact before.
Excellent.
That's a good question. So then what would happen then is the physicians on this study, so Dr. Davis would then go in, and or Dr. Lowell, one of the two, would go into their patient chart at the end, find out what their actual diagnosis was, and then they would compare that to what the paramedics thought, right? So you said it was appendicitis, and it ended up being a AAA. Well, that's a bit of a gap. So they recorded all of those, and then that feedback was given back to the paramedic. So, Jeff, that call you had last week, you said it was appendicitis, and ended up being a AAA. Maybe some lab values or some other diagnostic tools that were used, you might get that feedback as well. And then that's that. So right. So then after you get that diagnosis, then a week later, you're getting this survey, which is asking you questions about, you know, how did you think the feedback was? Is this positive? Is this a good learning experience? And so kind of here are some of the results. So let's say that overall, the vast majority of paramedics, so 91% agreed that learning about a patient diagnosis was beneficial to them as a clinician and help them improve differential diagnostic skills. 96% of the paramedics agree that if information regarding patient diagnosis was made available on a regular basis, they would utilize it as a learning tool. And so there was a whole bunch of questions like this to show that there really is so much learning that can take place by learning their final diagnosis.
Okay, excellent. That's awesome. And the data that you're quoting there, I assume that's on the sort of research poster that I have a copy of here.
That would be the one.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So, and we'll put that in the notes for the viewers to take a look at that. So I think one of the biggest stumbling blocks, I guess, is obviously you needed a team. You needed a good team of people, both pre-hospital and then, of course, in hospital as well, right? So I think that's a no-brainer to say you needed some cooperation there. So how do you envision this kind of going forward?
Well, that's the big question. And where do we go from here? So we've shown now that this is an important learning tool. We've shown that paramedics want their final diagnosis. And so we know all that. So now it's taking this information to the hospital to say, look at all the learning that can take place. Regardless of your thoughts of PHIPAA and circle of care and all of these things that we have to take into consideration and we have to figure out how we can go through that, let's start talking about an avenue for us to be able to find out this on a consistent basis. So let's start talking about, hey, who can we contact or can I have access? I mean, that's a long shot, but who can we contact to say, look at Mrs. Smith came in yesterday, abdominal pain. Can you tell me her final diagnosis? Just so we can use that for paramedic learning. So it's all about that. And we've started that a little bit. We now have feedback for all of our STEMI cases, our stroke cases, our trauma bypass cases, our mental health, and some pediatric cases. But how can we get into this big corporation, these big hospitals, and allow them to see the benefit? So I think step one for us is reaching out to like risk management and privacy at the hospitals to really show them that we are part of the circle of care, that these are our patients that we're bringing in, and showing them the learning. So I think this research, this poster that you've got is so important that now it's just not paramedic Jay coming in saying, you know, I really want to know what happened to Mrs. Smith yesterday. It's good for my learning. Now we can actually show that, and you know, this has been researched and proven that this helps with learning.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, yeah, it's about getting people on our side, right? Like when we go, John Schumann, who's he's talked about the Hamilton case and things like that. So you may know the name. So he's a lawyer and a paramedic in Ontario. He had a long paramedic career. So he's got a great kind of little blog on this, and he talks about PHIPAA specifically, and there is an exemption, and neither of us are lawyers, obviously, but he shows that there is an exemption in PHIPAA, a specific section that says health information custodians can disclose personal health information about patients for the purposes of education. So again, the whole circle of care, and there's a lot of nuance to that. It's always more than black and white in any piece of legislation, but I think it's talking to a good team of people that are, they're able to kind of capitalize on that and take advantages of those things. Right. Cause for a long time, we've just been told like, nope, like we're not allowed that information and that's the end. Right. So I'm glad that your organization is kind of starting things off. Your research results don't surprise me, but as we know, data is king, right?
100%.
We can't do much without the data. So
I think everyone could have predicted these results, but you're right. We need to have it on paper. And one of the things that I think is really going to help is that our local Emerge program is running a study kind of similar to having Emerge physicians and residents, et cetera, learn about their final diagnosis. And they're going to have, from what I understand, they're going to have people in the waiting rooms and out in the streets and just canvassing a whole bunch of people, surveying patients and soon to be patients to say, hey, do you mind if I find out your final diagnosis after you're done today so I can help with my learning, et cetera, et cetera. So those results along with these results and then making friends in the right places, I think is going to start this ball rolling.
Yeah, absolutely. I think your study is key. It's been studied before. We're going to put some other links in the show notes as well. I'm looking at a study in academic emergency medicine education and training, clinical performance feedbacks to paramedics, what they receive and what they need, and then a second one in the Canadian Medical Association Journal, Patient and Paramedic Engagement in Pre-Hospital Emergency Medicine Research, which talks a little bit about feedback. So I think the need has been there. Well, the want, I should say. The want has been there for a while. And like I say, I don't think your results are overly surprising by any means, but I think it's important data to use as a springboard. And I think you guys have really kind of started us off in step one. So if there's other services and there's other keen interest wondering, like, where do I go from here? Where do I start? What's your advice to them, short of calling Jay loosely?
Yeah, well, I mean, we're happy to help you with this. So I think you're definitely able to contact us. I would reach out to whoever looks after research in your organization. So those are the people that are going to have the ins with the research ethics board, the epidemiologists, the people that need to help get this thing running. Sometimes that might be your local base hospital. Some of those base hospitals have a robust research program. Some of them might just be your service. So I would start there and ask who looks after all of that, and then start the ball rolling. Because one of the nice things about this was that we captured so much data on that survey when the people were in the back hallway, that you're going to see a lot of spin-off studies from this. So we asked what paramedic Jeff thought that the abdominal pain was, and you said it was appendicitis, but it ended up being a AAA. Well, now we have all this data to say, well, how accurate are paramedics at their diagnosis? Like, are they close? Is there a reasonable match? Are they a miss? Is it a critical miss? We have all these things that we're going to kind of have a little bit of spin-off studies to, of even things like destinations. Did they pick the right destination? Should they have gone to a mental health facility? Should they have gone to somewhere else? Because we also asked during those questions of, do you think your patient could have gone somewhere else? Right? So if you said, yes, they could have gone somewhere else for their abdominal pain, but it ended up being a AAA, yeah, that's a critical miss. So that's another maybe episode we can talk about our, skills on that. But I would recommend that you talk to your research leads. And then our next steps are going to be privacy at the hospitals.
Yeah. And I think you bring about a good point too about, maybe some categories we're really good at and some we're not. So I think this is also a good driver, and this is right up your alley, but a good driver for QA, QI and education, right? If we find that our medics are 95% accurate at diagnosis A, it doesn't make a ton of sense to devote education and training time on diagnosis A, right? However, if we have a 40% gap in, like you say, I'll use your example, right, of abdominal diagnosis, maybe that's something that we can focus on in next CME or service training or what have you, right? So I think it's an excellent driver of future education as well.
Totally. And I think the biggest thing when we started this research was just focusing on that message to the paramedics that, look, this is not discipline-based. If you pick appendicitis and it's a AAA, like, it's okay. It's okay. This is going to help drive education and reinforcing the fact that, at the end of the day, you were never taught, how to diagnose. You weren't, nurses weren't, only physicians can. So this is not a problem. This is just allowing us to identify areas that we can really help with education. So you're right. This is a driver of education.
The concept of, so you've got maybe a couple people there that didn't find it valuable. What do you think are the gaps are there? Like, why would this not interest some people? Without getting into the deep end.
Well, you're right. I mean, like, so you've got, by looking at the poster, we have one person who didn't answer, two people strongly disagreed that learning about my patient's outcome has helped me feel closure about the call. You had one person that strongly disagreed that after receiving information about my patient diagnosis, I believe I will have increased my level of confidence when managing a similar case. I mean, I can't speak to those. Well, it was one person. I can't speak to that one person. Might have been an off day. Might have been that they requested diagnosis, a feedback on the broken wrist. And their thought process is, you know what? You told me their wrist was broken. I know it was broken. That was not helpful at all. So it might have just been a case of that.
Yeah, totally fair. And I think too, it may also go back to kind of where I opened, right? Like, I think we're probably more welcome to opening feedback when they say, hey, you nailed it, versus, hey, you were way off. But I think as a culture, historically, like especially over the last five-ish years, I think we're able to and shifting towards like, hey, this isn't a pride thing. I was wrong. Oh, well, how can I learn from it, right?
Exactly. We got to jump off that diving board and help drive our own education and not worry about making these little mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's about all I've got for you, Jay. I appreciate you taking the time. Anything else you kind of want to add or touch on?
No, I think that's awesome. Thank you for having me. This was a really fun research study to do. Involved a lot of people. Like I said, my colleagues that were on this, they were fantastic. And we're really happy to be able to actually show paramedics that this is a positive learning thing and that paramedics want this.
Yeah.
So now it's up to us. How can we make this happen? They want it. Now it's my job to go get it for them. So that's my goal.
Yeah, no brainer. And I'm hoping we get some people from every service across Ontario and Canada kind of on board with this. And hopefully in the next 10 years, this is just a cultural and service norm where we just have that information and we have better paramedics and clinicians out there. So Jay, I appreciate your time today. Thanks very much.
No problem. And, thank you very much.
Yeah, hopefully we'll talk to you soon at one point. And that wraps up episode 1.5, Paramedics and Patient Outcomes with Jay Loosely, Superintendent of Education with the Middlesex London Paramedic Service. As previously mentioned, we'll be dropping all the reference materials and the research poster in our show notes for listeners to review. In closing, we've shown that patient outcomes do indeed matter. They can strengthen the quality of the clinician's education and ergo their patient care as well. Jay's pointed out that despite privacy blockades, it's absolutely possible to start the ball rolling on a patient outcome program, big or small, within your service. And while it's no simple task, there's no time like the present to start laying the groundwork. I'd like to thank Jay once again for joining me this episode. Stay tuned for our next clinical case in episode 2, where we highlight some great learning points and, as always, surrounding literature as well. Please be sure to subscribe to our podcast on your favorite listening platform and help us grow by sharing on your social media platforms. And if you have an interesting case that you think would be beneficial to our listeners, please drop us a line at mail@rtpshow.com. Do not include any particulars in your initial email. Simply let us know that you have a case for us, and we'll guide you through properly giving us information in a way that respects patient privacy. As always, be sure to follow all your local protocols. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us again.